Colin Plake, good morning to both of us. John, can you give advice on how you approach learning a foreign language? I was informed Arabic is one of the most difficult languages to learn.
Yeah, it is. It's one of the most difficult languages to learn. The CIA, knowing that it's one of the most difficult languages to learn, demanded immersion, total, complete immersion. And so we were in Arabic from 8 to 4:30 every day, Monday through Friday, with a 1 hour break for lunch. But I went beyond that. I would get into the classroom at 5 a.m. and put on a pot of coffee. I would study until 7. I would have a private tutorial from 7 to 8 and then go from 8 to 4, 4:30. So I was 11 and a half hours of Arabic a day, nothing but Arabic. We were not permitted to speak at all in English after just the second week. And if that meant you had to use, you know, hand signals, you used hand signals. We didn't even learn the whole alphabet until Christmas. We started the last week of August. And then we had to do, well, this is going to sound kind of funny, but we had to do, like, it is normally a foreign immersion. We would go to Cairo for 6 weeks and just, you know, be immersed in Cairo, in the city, speaking Arabic. But I took Arabic during the Clinton budget cuts. And so there was no money to send us to Cairo. So I had to go to Detroit for 6 weeks and just stay in, you know, the Arab, you know, Arab town or whatever they call it in Detroit for 6 weeks. And it was cold. It was in the winter. It was in the winter, but it helped my Arabic, you know. And I was thinking about something else. Speaking of immersion, this was in 1993 as I was studying, and I had this awesome instructor. I had three awesome instructors. They were all CIA employees, but they were all ethnic Arabs, born, two of them born in Egypt and one born in Lebanon. And they would take us to the Arab bookstore in Falls Church, Virginia. They'd take us to the Arab grocery store in Fairfax. They'd take us to, you know, this Arab group and that Arab group, and we had to speak Arabic. So anyway, directly across the street from a condo that I lived in was this new mosque. And it's the biggest mosque in Northern Virginia. So our instructor, Ibrahim, he said one day, we're going to go to the mosque. Everything's going to be in Arabic, of course. And we're going to meet with the imam of the mosque. And we're going to talk about Islam in Arabic. And he knows that you're just learning. So we're going to talk. We're going to speak very slowly. So we go to the mosque. And who's the imam of the mosque, Ted? But a guy named Anwar al-Awlaki. Who later went on to be Al-Qaeda's chief spokesman and was murdered by a drone launched by Barack Obama. So years later, I was the only person that was still in the CIA when we killed al-Awlaki. So forgive me that I was still in the area when we killed al-Awlaki. So when I was at the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, I went to Yemen. That's when we killed him. This was 2 weeks before we killed him. And I was meeting with the FBI, the legal attaché at the American Embassy in Sana'a. And he said, I went in and I said, hi, I'm John Kiriakou. And he said, right, you're John Kiriakou, born August 9th, 1964, Sharon, Pennsylvania. You graduated from Newcastle High School, Newcastle, Pennsylvania. June of 1982, he joined the CIA, blah, 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 blah. He had my whole life. And I was like, very funny. And he said, you're going to do me a favor. And I said, oh, yeah, what's that? He said, I'm going to give you a classified briefing, which I've been specifically instructed not to do. And in exchange, when you go back to Washington, you're going to get me 2 assistant slots here in the embassy. I said, okay, that's a deal. I can find 2 assistant slots for you, the budget for it. So he gives me this classified briefing. It was about al-Awlaki. And he said, you're the only person still in government who has ever met al-Awlaki. So we want to debrief you. I said, come on, man. I said, that was 20 years ago. I don't remember anything about al-Awlaki. It was 18 years ago. I don't remember anything about al-Awlaki. And he said, we just want to get your recollections, what kind of person he is to talk to. I said, what are you going to do? You're going to approach him? You can't find him. You don't even know what country he's in. And he said to me, I'll never forget it. He said, we know his location within 3 feet.
Oh, man.
And I said, oh, shit. And then they droned him 2 weeks later.
Why'd they care about his personality if they're just going to blow up his personality?
I think the speculation in my mind was that there was an argument between the CIA, which wanted to drone him, and the FBI, which wanted to try to recruit him.
Mm.
And the CIA won and said, screw that, we're droning him.
Gotcha. Well, that's
crazy, huh?
That's a crazy, crazy story. Want to support the show with style? Go to deprogram.live and check out our merch. That's deprogram.live, or check out the description below. Thanks for watching. Question for you, John, from Kodorak. China has had spectacular public espionage successes against us. Are we giving as good as we get, maybe privately?
Yeah. Yeah. How should I say this without getting myself in trouble? We've had success against the Chinese. We have for many years, many years. So this is a game that is played well on both sides. The Chinese, if you look at Americans arrested for passing information to the Chinese, the last like 3 or 4 people have been people without access to really the most sensitive information. They're, you know, think tank people, or, you know, people married to people who might have access, or it's not the Aldrich Ameses, you know, or Harold Nicholson's of the world. On the other hand, you don't hear about Americans getting arrested by the Chinese. And I think it's because the tradecraft is better.
Pink Lady Apples, question for both of us. We know the government can spy on any of us, but do they actually watch boring everyday people like me? Haha. Do they listen through my TV? No, they don't listen. They watch.
Yeah,
and they listen.
What they do, it's not necessarily a human being that is right. Watching you. It's you know, the giant Cray computers that NSA employs. And they're listening to our phones, and they're reading our text messages and our emails, and they're just saving all that data just in case.
And that was true in 2011, the data that Snowden released in 2013. So that's right. You know, the technology is 15 years later now. From Ray, did you hear about the U.S. deal with the Armenians about leasing 40 miles of southern border for 99 years, cutting off the Silk Road? Also, U.S. building nuclear plants for AI centers there.
Yeah, and I think that's why the Armenians didn't object earlier this week when J.D. Vance went to Azerbaijan it was to improve relations with Azerbaijan to use them against the Iranians.
Okay, actually, time for one more, John, because I just want to hear the answer. 10 euros, thanks from Demwell. John, during your time at the CIA, did you encounter instances where claims initially dismissed as conspiracies turned out to be true?
Oh, sure. Always. I mean, it's more practical stuff than you might imagine. Like, will there be a coup in Qatar, for example? It was no, 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 no. Okay, yes. And then there was a coup.